Oh yeah, welcome ladies and gentlemen to yet another exciting broadcast of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 4 days a week for your listening psychological pleasure. And the whole way that we derive pleasure from talking about really horrific things is I make jokes that are that aren't quite as bad as the situations in which we discuss, of course with the modicum of respect that people who suffer in their daily lives and all the activists and things of that nature that we bring on this show are due. Now, speaking of which, today, ladies and gentlemen, we've got one heck of a show for you. In fact, we have a heck of a show for you pretty much every day. And that's the whole reason why you should be listening every single day. But I'm going to be interviewing Kimberly Dortch and her lawyer, Melody Kramer, talking about how the police treated Kimberly's son for spray painting. It's a very sordid story exploring the police state America has become. So, Kimberly, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Vinnie. Thanks for having us on to discuss what has been going on.
And your lawyer, Melody Kramer, as well.
Hi, thank you so much for having us on, and I look forward to talking with you about everything that's been going on here.
So let's get into the brass tacks and get down to the details. Who would like to start? I would preferably like to start off with a little bit of introduction about you both. So, Kimberly, if you wouldn't mind explaining to us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Okay. Well, you know, we all wear lots of different hats, but the first one I have found that's the most important is that I am a sovereign human creature living on this earth. And I didn't understand that at all until this really hit at our doorstep. We were studying a lot of alternative stuff on a lot of different independent media and books and all kinds of things. We threw the TV out about 9-10 years ago and got serious about figuring out what was really going on in our world. And other hats I wear is mom, wife, I'm a nurse. And I'm also a nutritional therapist, which has spun out of figuring out how screwed up the sick care industry is and wanting to actually help people get well, not just mask underlying problems. And now I've kind of been foisted into the law arena to be, you know, distinguished from legal arena. And this whole thing started in 2013 in March when our then 12-year-old son got arrested in our neighborhood, the only neighborhood he's ever lived in. We brought him home from the hospital to that house, and he got arrested for graffiti with another boy in our neighborhood. And things really just pretty much spun out of control from that moment forward. And I'm going to try to keep this summation of this, what is now almost a 3-year saga story, very short. And if people want all the down and dirty details, one of the best comprehensive interviews that I've done about the early phases of this story is on Red Ice Creations Radio, and it's archived in their October section for 2014. So anybody who wants all the juice, they can go there. But to kind of just put this into the Reader's Digest version, we went down to the police station in our town, Murrieta, California, in Riverside County, and we asked to be present while our 12-year-old minor son, who had never even been to detention at school, this child did not have behavioral issues. He was not a problem child. We were denied access to our son. So we asked if we could have an attorney present. And we were flatly told no. And we were pretty shocked by that. And the police officer informed us that our son was seen as an adult, quote unquote, in the eyes of the law, and that he had waived his Miranda rights. So they proceeded to hold our child and question him and interrogate him until almost 2 o'clock in the morning, when they finally returned our wayward son to us. We hired a public defender, a private one, And I said that wrong. She was a private defense attorney we hired. We got official charges in the mail. They were all misdemeanor level. And we had a court date scheduled for April 22 of 2013. And 2 days prior to, you know, thinking we were going to go to this hearing and figure out, you know, how we were going to make right the situation with our son, our home was invaded SWAT style on April 20th of 2013 by the Murrieta Police Department and a lot of other auxiliary law enforcement agencies in the county of Riverside. And basically what they did was they trumped up, made up felony level charges against our son and labeled them tagging, which puts things into this whole other category of gang, potential gang involvement. And let me tell you, our 12-year-old son at the time was very small for his age. He weighed 70 pounds. He has never been a part of a gang. And this police department was fully aware that he was in no way in any kind of a gang. So they literally invaded our house and they occupied it military style for 7.5 hours. I was not in the home that day. My creator knew I could not handle this, that I would not remain calm while they woke my sleeping 12-year-old up, four huge officers in SWAT gear. And they took him to jail for, you know, here they had arrested him 5 weeks earlier. They're accusing him of doing something again and making it tagging level. So they took him off to juvenile hall. And they continued, even though they supposedly, you know, found a notebook where he had written the same word in it that he had been, you know, spraying things and writing things. And a lot of it truly was done in washable Crayola markers.
Kimberly, one second there. Melody, would you be able to mute your microphone and or turn off your Skype notifications there? We can hear you typing in the background. Sorry, Kimberly. Continue.
Oh, my apologies. Yeah, let me figure out how to do that.
It's a little microphone symbol and you click it with your mouse and it mutes it. Kimberly, please continue.
Yes. Okay. So, basically in this 7.5 hour occupation of our home, my husband was unlawfully arrested without a warrant and chained or handcuffed to our patio furniture in the backyard. My daughter and her boyfriend were at the house, and they were also detained in the backyard for hours on end in the California heat with no water and no food, while law enforcement came into the house and literally tore our house upside down. They went through all of the stuff that I do for nutritional therapy. They tested every single thing in our house from probably shampoo to herbs for drugs. And in the end, law enforcement themselves set up a lab in our house and took pictures of it. That they collected all kinds of things from all over the house. The scale that I use in the kitchen to weigh out herbs for capsules for clients. They took a Bunsen burner out of my children's playroom closet that was for science experiments. They took little glass bottles and different things from all over the house, chemicals from the pool shed for, you know, cleaning the swimming pool. And they assembled and made a quote-unquote clandestine mobile lab. And we're completely incensed by this. We were absolutely floored that, you know, law enforcement would basically make up charges against a 12-year-old and jail them. But things were going to get much, much worse because we countersued the county for the unlawful behavior that they, you know, performed on that day. And on May 29 of 2013.
That unlawful behavior includes setting up a meth lab in your house.
Well, they didn't say what kind of lab it was at that point, but they were attempting, I think, to set up a meth lab because we have discovered that the county gets huge grant kickbacks for anything related to meth. So if you can make any kind of, a call out to someone's house for a domestic disturbance or anything you can think of, if they can relate it to drug charges, especially meth, there's a lot of money to be made for the county.
So there's these kind of meth-head MacGyver police officers who are just going around basically in a money-making scheme trying to set up these fake things so that they can get kickbacks from the county. That makes a whole lot of sense.
I've talked to so many people now in this county, now that I have been and my husband have been so verbal about the abuses that we have suffered. Many, many people have contacted us, and they have very similar stories. So I know that we're not the only ones.
Well, not maybe only that, we're the only ones. The ones who came forward are probably only a handful by comparison to how many people has happened to, and they actually either shut their mouths and did not fight it like you have, either, or they didn't have the resources to fight it, or they're in jail right now.
Absolutely true. So we fast forward to 5 months later in November of 2013, when they left the house that day, they told my husband that they were going to send various things off to the lab and see what, if there were any charges. So they left the house that day. My husband was completely shattered, as was my daughter, because, our son is locked up in juvenile hall. And we can't talk to him. You have no access to him. Your parental rights are gone, out the window, zip. You don't have any. The state, parents patriae, the state as parent, has taken over your biological product of your marriage. And that's what it really, really boils down to. And we were absolutely horrified. I kid you not, that night, my husband and I, once I got home and dealt with, the aftermath of this situation, I cannot even explain to people who have never been through something like this. And without a doubt, your child did not do this, did not further commit any crime, let alone a tagging gang-level crime, and that now your husband potentially has charges hanging over his head, and you feel absolutely terrified and powerless. It was like we were shaking. The two of us were shaking so bad, holding on to each other that night. You would have thought we were in one of those old vibrating beds from an old sleazy motel. Literally, that's how much our physical bodies were in a state of just anxiety and panic over,
traumatic
what
shock.
Do we do? Exactly. So 3 days later, we had a hearing and we were able to get our son released from juvenile hall. And we had to, under duress, sign all kinds of crazy contracts that our son was going to be on this house arrest program. We had to literally call in when I left the house to take him to school. I had to call the probation department and say, we're in the car, we're going to school, Zach will be at school for this many hours, and I will. And I had to call him when we got home. It was absurd. You would think this little 70-pound kid who had, he hadn't even been convicted of anything yet. He had charges on him. It's just a money-making thing. It's just different jobs for people to have to get a paycheck off the, extorted American public's backs. So fast forward in November, after we had filed this countersuit without an attorney, it was with the aid of a common lawyer who helps people do this kind of thing, because we really didn't trust the legal system at all. And especially because this defense attorney we had hired for my son, Sharon Cosgrove, was completely selling us down the river. And she would lie bold-faced in court. She told our son was face. She felt sorry for him, that we were his parents. I mean, just hideous things that this woman would do. So we were very, very hesitant to try to get any other kind of attorney help. So we went this route of filing this lawsuit on our own. And this caused a major, major stir. And some of the language in there got us labeled, quote unquote, sovereign citizens. David and I had never even heard that term before in our lives prior to them accusing us of being such. And if you're familiar with that term, this is a real hot topic that has come up over recent years that law enforcement uses to pretty much treat Americans as homegrown, homeland, you know, terrorist.
Yeah, yeah.
So to speak.
See that. And it's so, kind of like if you've got a pocket constitution, you're wearing blue jeans, you make frequent references to the law or things of that nature. This guy's a terrorist.
Yeah, he's questioning the nanny pappy state, and this will not be tolerated. This could be catching. We better stop this right now. So in November, on November 1 of 2013, my husband was arrested by the lead defendant in our lawsuit that we filed, Brendan Carney, who also was the officer who led the raid on our home, the SWAT-style raid in April. And he arrested my husband.
The clown who did this raid, his name was literally Carney.
I can't even make this stuff up. His name is Brendan Carney, and we do. We refer to him as the Carney the Clown, the bad, naughty carnival clown. You better believe we do.
Well, it's a very apt description because, let me guess, he's rigged up an entire game that you can't win?
We're 3 years into this, and my husband is sitting in jail right now, day 22, unlawfully as a political prisoner for literally nothing more than exercising his right to free speech and especially political speech in how dare you in a courtroom. And that's really the bottom line, but we have, you know, there's a lot of steps in between there. But at the end of the day, that is what is the truth. We have fought back and we have fought back hard. My husband tried to continue to represent himself until January of 2014 when these charges were made official, and he tried on his own to enter a demur into court, which is like a statement of the facts and the truth and you know, how evidence had been altered and police reports had been falsified. And it was a beautiful document that the judge said he read all 40 pages of, but of course we were ruled against, and the judge told my husband that if he continued to represent himself, he would be held to the same standard as a bar attorney. And there is so much case precedent that says they cannot do that. It is our right as humans to represent ourselves in legal matters, even in these admiralty equity courts. But we could see that we were not making any headway whatsoever, doing things in an alternative manner, and that we didn't know enough to bring the thing home. So we relented and we hired another defense attorney named Michael Levinson, who took $15,000 cash from us and proceeded to never file a single motion on my husband's behalf. But he tried to wheel and deal a deal with the prosecutor for my husband to drop charges down to misdemeanor methamphetamine possession charges. And mind you, methamphetamine had never entered into this case whatsoever. They accused my husband of making manufacturing for sale and distribution a hallucinogenic drug. And this is completely inaccurate.
Is there a possibility that the police were on hallucinogenic drugs and that's how they thought that this guy was manufacturing it and selling it?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me.
Don't get high on your own stash, anyway, cops. I mean, my God.
Yeah. So anyway, my husband was arrested for 27 hours that first time. I posted bail, and they continued to hold the bail in the body unlawfully for 18 hours after I posted bail. They did all kinds of horrible things to my husband while he was in that jail. They tried to force him to give a DNA sample as an innocent man who had never been convicted or, you know, hadn't even been officially charged at this point with anything. So then that ended up being more charges on him for refusing to give his DNA, which has now been found in the state of California to be unconstitutional. But that doesn't matter in Riverside County. They will not stop trying to get people's DNA. And they tried again when they arrested my husband, this time on September 1st. I don't even know how to fill in all the gaps, you guys, as to what has actually gone on. But right now, today, my husband sits in jail at the Southwest Detention Center in Riverside County on zero bail, like he's some kind of cartel member or serial killer. And Melody might want to jump in at this point and just start to kind of describe some of the legal nightmare that she has encountered, because she took over our civil case. We had dropped that at a point because we had no money to proceed. We were being blocked at every turn, and she came on the scene and she picked it back up for us and she refiled it at the federal level. Well, when she could see what kind of railroading was going on with my husband, with this defense attorney we had hired, she ended up taking over the criminal case as well. And she fought hard for us for many, many months and has met nothing but resistance from this superior court here in Murrieta, California.
Mm. Can I just offer a theory here? My theory is that the police department and the people that are presiding over this case are corrupt. And what corrupt people do when they're being exposed is they destroy whoever's trying to expose them and don't follow their own proper, you know, alleged due process in order to do it. So my question is, who are these corrupt individuals? What kind of schemes have they got their hands buried in? And has anybody caught them with their hands in the cookie jar yet? But let's go to the Melody here, because she's been sitting here waiting patiently for over 20 minutes. Sorry about that, Melody.
It's okay. Usually lawyers are the ones taking up everyone's time.
Especially at like $700 an hour. But go ahead.
Exactly. But what has astounded me, and just to give you a little background for me, I've practiced law for over 20 years. I'm licensed to practice in Nebraska and California and have been in courts all around the country. And one thing that usually you can rely on in any court is that the court records are meticulously kept by clerks. That's just what they do, keep all the filings, they keep all the records. There are called minute orders that describe what happened in any court proceeding. In this case, and in Riverside County, unlike any court I have ever been in before, even their record keeping is falsified and incomplete. To the point that today I was looking through some records of court hearings where I was personally present and I know what happened, and the record written by the judge is completely opposite of what actually happened in court that day.
That's interesting. In New Zealand, we don't do that. What we do is we just don't keep court records at all. And if any case comes up where the judge is corrupt, they just make it up on the spot. They don't even have falsified records.
Interesting. Now here we just papers like God. So that's how all our court records are done there. It's in paper. And then if you appeal on up to another higher level court, you rely on that paper record to see what's happened. And then the higher level court can make a decision on that. But in this case, it's not even proper. And let me give you an example. In November 14th, 2014, when I was representing Dr. Dortch, it was arraignment, which was supposed to be the formal reading of the charges in court. And that is a right that every defendant has. And the judge asked whether he waived that right. Many defendants do. We said, no, we don't. And the judge required me to read the charges against my client. Again, I've never seen that before. And then after I had done that, he called me and the prosecuting attorney up to the bar, up by him. And he said, "Ms. Kramer, I don't know if you practice much criminal law, but I just want to let you know that you put your client in serious danger by reading those charges in open court. And I said, Your Honor, these charges are bogus and made up, and they're not supported by evidence. And he turned over to, in the courtroom, there were probably five or six people that were from the jail that were in custody in orange suits. And he said, do you think the people in orange are going to care when he's put in jail?
And not when.
I'm sorry, Kim?
Not if, but if, when he's when, put in jail.
When he's put in jail. And I have never, I've never been treated that way by a judge, and never such disrespect for the entire process. But going back to what I was saying, the court records show that he waived the reading, formal reading of the complaint, as did I. And it's not even close to what happened in the court hearing. And it goes on and on in this process. They, when Dr. Dortch decided back in April, I guess it's April 2015, which was 2 years into this whole saga, but he decided to let me go from representing him in the criminal case and proceed on his own. And the court basically wouldn't allow him to do that, forced an attorney on him, and said, this person is going to speak for you. And that attorney has then taken actions to just make matters much worse than they were before. And so the latest round on that was this appointed attorney that Dr. Dortch has objected to said, if you don't talk to me, if you don't cooperate with me, then I'm going to tell the court that I'm raising a doubt as to your mental competence. And that is, in fact, what he has done. And what the judge did was latched onto that and actually suspended the criminal case. So it's nothing's happening in the criminal case. And she's ordered mental competence evaluations of Dr. Dortch, even though the only person who's made any suggestion of any question on this is this attorney that was forced on Dr. Dortch. Not even the prosecution thinks there's an issue. I don't think there's an issue. There's just no evidence of an issue. And yet they want to try to send psychiatrists and psychologists to talk to him and ask him questions about the case.
And force medicate him on so many whacked out drugs that he'll be, you know, like the... basically, he'll be kind of like in one of those scenes where the heroes of the story come in to rescue somebody, but they're so whacked out of their mind on drugs that they don't even know what's going on, and they have to carry them out of there, and they can't testify for themselves or do anything, and they've just been damaged way up to hell. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's sort of the process there, that if one of these psychiatrists and psychologists would come back to the court and say, well, they're not competent to stand trial, but if we give them enough antipsychotic meds, then they should be fine, then that will put the court in a position where she may try to force him to take antipsychotic meds. I mean, it's just spiraling into worse and worse situations.
Which have known side effects of suicide and that kind of thing, and considering the stress of the situation, wrongful arrest and what have you, it might actually exacerbate the situation. In fact, that's probably the intention.
Absolutely it is. And, you know, Dr. Dortch, while he was representing himself in this interim time, had filed another number of documents on his own that laid out the fraud and the falsification of reports and all of this stuff, and it's in.
Do you have a fan by chance blowing on your microphone there in the background?
Is that better?
I hope so.
Is that better?
Well, so
sorry.
But please continue.
So what I found in all it just boggles the mind. Because my background is both in prosecution and defense. So I've seen both sides of the coin, and I understand both sides. It's a difficult job to have, but there's certain lines you have to draw. And police reports in this case from Brendan Carney and also some other officers are on their face falsified. He changed his mind as to what officers accompanied him on this search of the Dortch home in April 2013. In 6 months' time, he changed who was even present there, the dates that supervisors approved the reports are months prior to when the reports were even written. There's documentation within the police reports about destruction of evidence. This purported lab, most of the components of that purported lab have been destroyed. I can't even evaluate it. I can't look at it. And all they have is a picture. And there is no way all these items they have in a picture could be put together in assembled in any fashion to make any sort of lab of anything.
Unless you're looking at the picture while under the influence of confiscated hallucinogenic substances. Thank you.
Now, in that situation, I don't know. Could be. Could be.
If they found such, that would be another story, but hey, they didn't.
Hey, man, where's that really good stuff that makes a whole bunch of inanimate objects look like a meth lab? I want that shit, man.
Okay, you have a point. You have a point, and I have not analyzed that angle, but I'll take a look at it.
It's worth a look, you know.
It's become, if it weren't so serious, if the consequences have not been so serious in the Dortch family, it would be a comedy show. For the preliminary hearing in this case, they put on an officer who was qualified by the court to speak as an expert, and his expert, the basis of his expert opinion was he got online and he Googled this particular substance, and he read an article on the Huffington Post, and he did all these things after the search of the house, and he was qualified as an expert with the court to talk about this drug.
Here's my problem with this situation. Although it seems so crazy, you're basically in opposite land, you're Alice in Wonderland, up is down, down is up, corrupt is legal, and legal is corrupt, you know, that kind of thing. It's very difficult to look at it from a first-person perspective and see the humor in it at the time. What it does is it creates a schism, a sort of crazy-making, what the frick is going on, sort of thing in your mind. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's only when you get Vinnie Eastwood from New Zealand on to talk about this stuff, you see the comedy in it.
Like I said, if it were not for the seriousness of it, yeah, it would be the makings of a comedy show because it is so unbelievably screwed up. September 3rd, after this second arrest of Dr. Dortch, I spent the entire day at the court trying to speak to him. Just for a minute or two to see if he wanted me to represent him again in the criminal case. And I am his attorney, have been his attorney in this pending civil rights case, which of course has been stayed by the federal court until the criminal case is done, which is convenient that now they've stopped the criminal case entirely such that it will never be done, therefore the civil case never happened. But literally spent at least six times. I went to the jail. I went to the courtroom. I went in and out this courtroom, that courtroom, and the deputies would constantly stop me and say, you can't talk to him. And in one hearing, three of them came at me forcibly and physically took me out of the courtroom. I mean, they didn't touch me, but forced me out of the courtroom, wouldn't allow me to watch. And finally, in the afternoon, we were up in yet another courtroom, and I could see him across the courtroom. He was back behind in the glassed-in area on the other side of the courtroom, and I could see him mouthing the words, I want you to represent me. And the deputy came over to me and said, stop communicating with him. You got to stop talking with him, or I'll kick you out of the courtroom. These are basic things, right to counsel on his side, and First Amendment rights and open access to the courts on my side. And yet these deputy sheriffs there in the court seemed it was perfectly fine to keep me from talking to him and referring to the way the case has gone and officer safety and things that make absolutely no sense. There's no history of violence, suggestion of violence, anything like that on the part of the Dorch family or on me. There's nothing like that. And so for them to act the way they are is just unbelievable. I just can't wrap my head around it.
Probably because you're not familiar with the definition of a psychopath, or a corporate psychopath, rather. They're charming and enchanting when you first meet them, but they're ultimately shallow and have few meaningful, long-lasting relationships. They desire money, power, sex, and they're willing to sabotage, intimidate, manipulate, lie, defame, and cheat, and steal in order to get what they want.
Yep, you described them.
Yeah.
Now, suddenly make a whole lot of sense why the world is the way it is. Because these people, because they require money and power for their own personal fulfillment and nothing else, they get into the highest paying positions and they get into the most powerful positions. And all of the regular people who don't crave money and power as a means of your entire life existence, you also value other things like human life, justice, honor, respect. You're not going to be very, shall we say, supported by the system.
Nope. No. You're seen as the enemy of the system, basically.
Because you literally are the enemy of the system.
Exactly. And that's what we have to continue to focus on, because this is a nightmare. My husband is locked up. He's not being able to work his optometry business, where he's been a doctor for 16, 17 years in this community and over 20 years total. And they are, like you described earlier, they are on destruction mode. If they lock him up long enough, we'll lose our business. We're already broke from, you know, we've spent upwards of $70,000 at this point trying to prove my husband's innocence and get anybody.
We seem to have lost you there, Kimberly. Are you back? Can anybody? No? All right. Melody, could you continue on from that?
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems this endless battle, and the Dorches have tried to do it on their own, tried to do it with council, and it seems like every avenue that has been taken is shut down. For example, there's a process in California law. It's called a pitches motion, and that's where you request certain information about police officers that were involved in your case, and you ask for basically history of other people who have complained about them, disciplinary actions, things like that. So I filed this motion. It's a very typical motion to be filed in court, and what they did was they put a stamp on it, the date it was received, and then they threw it in a clerk's drawer, didn't put it as part of the court record, and when the day came for hearing, they said I hadn't filed it. Finally, the clerk opened her drawer where it had been sitting for 2 months. We went back in chambers, and the judge said, well, that really doesn't matter because I never read discovery motions, and forced us to go back and talk and refile and whatever. So I refiled it again and set it for hearing on another day, 2 months down the road. And the judge, again, didn't deal with it. He just kicked it over to another judge who had a high priority matter before this and then said, well, I'm not going to rule on this now. So it gets kicked around. It's never been ruled on. There are motions to suppress evidence. There's also something called Brady material obligation. If the prosecution has exculpatory material, they are required to turn that over to the defense. Doesn't have to be a motion, anything like that. They're absolutely obligated to turn that over. And they've told us they have stuff and they won't turn it over.
What is exculpatory?
That means that it shows tends to show innocence of the accused.
Aha! You can't throw me in jail. I've been exculped.
No, it's if there's evidence that is in favor of the defendant, the prosecution's required to turn it over. The prosecutor has a very special obligation, and that is they are not to pursue criminal matters as a win at all costs sort of proposition. They're supposed to endeavor to do justice. And if partway through the case they realize that they should not have brought certain charges or the evidence doesn't support them, they're obligated to dismiss those. In this case, none of that has happened. Every time Dr. Dortch has exercised a constitutional right, they add another charge. Started out with he was arrested on one, then they asked for a DNA sample, and he refused, so they added on another one. That statute has since been held unconstitutional. They won't drop the charge. They tacked on a charge of willful cruelty to a child. There's no evidence of any kind. I mean, not even an allegation of any evidence of any kind of any child being harmed. And then with the issue of an offer of a plea agreement saying, by the way, you should dismiss the civil lawsuit, the civil rights lawsuit, and stop making trouble for yourself.
That's basically what I've found that that's the best way to interact with police is just, you know, they are always real, real nasty if you don't do exactly what they want.
Oh, yes, master. It's about down for you and your majesty. Oh, please don't hurt me.
That is exactly it. You phrased it exactly right. And that is very, very apparent too in this most recent arrest on September 1st. Fortunately, someone who works in Dr. Dortch's office was able to get video of almost the entire interaction. And what happened was Dr. Dortch was on his way to the office, and one police officer, plainclothes, walked up to him, started talking to him about some innocuous topic, and then five or six other officers came from the other side and also in plain clothes and tackled him. And the video starts, you see him flat on the ground with these officers on him, and he's not moving, he's not kicking, he's not thrashing, he's nothing. And yet with all of this, they still filed more charges, said he was resisting arrest. It doesn't even matter. There's video evidence that he was not resisting arrest, and still they have another charge.
Now, here's the thing. Many people grow up in a system, and they believe in the system. I once believed in the system. But
I did too.
When the police told me that if you're honest with us, and we'll go easy on you, and then I was honest with them, and then they made up evidence, my faith in the system kind of disappeared in an instant, and that left a big hole in my life, because it was like a religion, like a faith, isn't it? You know, I believe in the institution. I believe that the police are there to protect people. I believe that judges are there to administer real, true justice and be blind about it, so that it doesn't matter what you look like or who you are, you'll always get a fair hearing. When you find out that everything's actually the exact opposite of that, I mean, not just like a little bit off to the side, but the exact opposite, you get this extraordinary feeling of disillusionment. And how do you deal with that other than basically you have to change your entire life, because you'd previously built up a lot of the way that you view yourself and the way that you view the world based upon these assumptions of how the world truly functions. And unfortunately, it means you currently have to basically destroy every single part of your personality to a large degree that in any way supported the establishment. And you have to and it leaves a big hole. And you have to refill that with something, usually with anger and a quest for justice, right? To right the wrongs. What I found interesting is that sometimes the wrongs don't get righted. In fact, most of the times they don't. Because when you're trying to right a wrong, you've got rules that you follow. There's certain things that you won't do, but your enemy doesn't have those rules. And so they win the majority of the time. And it's a horrific realization. Now, I believe that Kimberly is back online. So, AFR, if you could reconnect her, please. We had a disconnection issue there. But, yeah, Melody, please continue.
I think there is a certain level of disconnection with that. I've practiced, you know, for over 20 years, and I have a certain perception of the courts. And certain respect for judges and for law enforcement. I have friends who are in law enforcement. And what I'm seeing here in Riverside, this is not how it is everywhere. I know it's not where it is everywhere, but it is something that's becoming more common and more prevalent. I think there's more fear on the part of law enforcement, some of it justified, some of it not. And I think we've lost this connection between with the courts and law enforcement all being part of the community. And now it's sort of a military force as opposed to a peacetime institution.
So that means you are treated as a prisoner of war, not a citizen with rights.
Yeah, that's what it seems to be coming to.
You got quite a lot of prisons, don't you?
We do. Oh, well. And I think that in and of itself is wrong. Yeah. I just...
Well, there's an incentive now to imprison people for whatever reason you can, so that the private prisons can continue to make a profit off of keeping people's freedom off them, you know?
Exactly. And when you have, in our country, a higher percentage of the populace imprisoned than anywhere, that's one of our claims to fame, if you will, is we imprison more of our citizens per capita than any other country in the world. Something's wrong when that's the case. Something is fundamentally wrong with our justice system when we think the solution for everything is to lock them up in jail.
Well, I found that that's kind of a natural progression. Have a look at the high schools in the United States now, the public high schools. They kind of remind you a lot of a prison, don't you think? They've got all these cell blocks and things of that nature. They've got security checkpoints and things to take all the guns off you and what have you when you come into school. And I kind of came to the realization that it's a prisoner training camp, kind of like, you know, get you used to the idea of being a prisoner. And in many ways, without stimulating their minds to learn of their own volition, to be independent and things like that, and simply to submit to authority, the likelihood that they will become prisoners increases.
I hadn't really thought of it that way. And that's a interesting thought. I do think that in terms of having security checks and metal detectors at schools, it has become something to sort of make parents and school staff feel safer because we've had so many school shootings. But I think that keeps us from getting to the root of the problems, that schools have become too large to really effectively teach and effectively see how students are interacting with each other and with the world. And then it is sort of segregation of everybody, and it's sort of moving cattle around as opposed to being a vibrant learning institution.
This is what's at the heart, right? Everybody is like talks that education goes real deep with people. Whenever I criticize any educational institution, if somebody's either been a part of it and hasn't been disillusioned by it, they'll get this big kind of chill up their spine and they'll be very upset and angry with me. And I understand, you know, it's mind control. Basic mind control is sleep deprivation, repetition, submission to authority, and ostracizing the people that are different. Now, if that's not a layman term description for every high school in America and almost every job in America, I don't know what is.
Yeah. I think there's some truth to that. So, I think even in the legal profession, and I'm putting the final touches on my upcoming book, which is Why Lawyers Suck and What You Can Do About It. And one of the things that I go into in that book is talking about how lawyers turn into these really unpleasant people based on how we're trained to think, how we're trained to interact with others, and how we're treated in law school. It starts with how we're treated in law school. And there is that submission to authority, usually a male authority figure. There is this feeling of exposure that you're going to be made a mockery of in front of your peers. And there is this control element that the professor gets to make your life miserable if they choose to do that, publicly miserable. And it leads you to thinking that's how the legal world is supposed to be. And it shouldn't be that way. There's very little about the law school environment that leads to cooperative actions and settling differences. It's all about competition and who's going to be top of the heap. And that's, you have to be that way in order to get into law school and to survive law school and to survive in the legal world after that.
Now, there was a study conducted, and Kim, welcome back, by the way. That was a little bit a frustrating one, but...
Yeah, this happens on a regular basis these days.
Yeah, I interviewed this guy, Dr. John Hall, about psychotronic weapons and basically covert technology that they use to stalk people and send signals into their brains, so it sounds like somebody's talking in their head and what have you. And mm-hmm. Almost every single time he's been on air, there have been these really weird things going on with the lines, so... I sometimes chalk it down to the control room approach. Control Room is a great documentary about Al Jazeera and how it was demonized in the Western media. And one of the guys from Saudi Arabia, he said, basically what happens in Saudi Arabia is we become really paranoid that everything's an Israeli conspiracy. If a water pipe bursts in Damascus, it's an Israeli conspiracy instead of our incompetence. and in talk radio sense, I see this happening a lot where basically, I don't want to actually disparage anybody here, but incredibly talentless, boring, just incompetent radio show hosts blame the Israelis for fucking up their show. It just cracks me up, bro. But sometimes it's real.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, cooperation tends to accomplish a lot more than competition. And there was a study conducted where they had a trial run of two delivery companies. And there were two routes from point A to B that they could have taken. One route is very short, but it's got a front gate and an end gate that each of the different players control. And the other route is much, much longer. And the idea is to make as much money as you possibly can. So in the first experiment, they kept trying to go up the gate, but the other person would close the gate either in front of them or behind them, and they wouldn't be able to make their delivery, and they'd have to go around, and they'd lose money. And second experiment, same result, with the same conditions. You give one advantage to the other person, and it doesn't matter. Both of them don't make as much money. But when the third experiment came round and they found that they cooperated and they allowed both of each other to pass through the gates in order to take the more direct route to make their deliveries, they found that they made a lot more money. And that's why competition is more profitable and more productive. Why cooperation is more productive than competition. Competition is to destroy the other side, and if you can't destroy the other side, all right, it's kind of like trying to outdo them. But if you don't have a conscience, it's no longer about how creative or how good your product can be. It only comes down to how much damage you can do to your competition, and has nothing to do with the quality of the product or what's good for the customer and the end result. And that's why we've got private prisons, ladies and gentlemen. Competition. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. With the reverb. Sounds very nice. Kim, would you be able to turn your speakers down just a little bit there? Yeah, just turn the volume down. That's so much
better.
Not quite perfect. Wait. It's good. Okay. I'm no Superman, ladies and gentlemen, but laser beams do shoot out of my eyes if I see David Rockefeller. And my very special guests are Kim Deutsch and her lawyer, Melody Kramer, who have been going through this just cacophonously horrific ordeal. And I'm surprised that you can even laugh at the jokes here. I mean, really, it's so freaking serious. I don't even know how I'm even capable of doing this show. You know, this is one of those items where if you feel it, truly feel it, you get real damage. You know, like seriously, listen up, ladies and gentlemen. You start listening to these people, these stories that they're telling. Really try and feel it. You will get traumatized just by hearing about it. Imagine amplifying that pain times 1,000, times 1,000,000. Imagine it doesn't go away as soon as you stop listening to the radio show. Imagine it's with you always. That's why it's important to get these stories out there. Not only does it help to get it off your chest, but sometimes it also helps to share the load.
Yes, and there are so many others going through just as bad or worse. Some of the stories that I've heard from people in this county and in other places in the world and in the United States, it's just amazing what the so-called legal system is doing to humanity all over this globe and getting away with it by and large. But I really think that the tide is beginning to change. I think that shows like yours and many others that are exposing the corporate nature of government and that it isn't any longer representative government in anywhere on the planet, let alone here in the so-called land of the free and the home of the brave. And people are sick of it. They are seeing the scam for what it is, and we've all got to collectively stand up together to this beast, because the people, wherever you are, we, the people, created government. They're supposed to be our public servants. And the, you know, there's that Hammurabi's maxim of law that, you know, the created can't be removed from the creator. We have to take this thing back over, and we have to have more people in the law profession like Melody that are willing to stand up against this beast, where they can be extremely ostracized, if not, you know, have their bar card taken from them if they don't play by the so-called rules that have been set by the bar. It's truly mind-boggling. It really is what we have gone through as a family and what Melody has chosen to go through with us by standing by our side since she came on the scene in June of 2014.
Sometimes one person doing the direct opposite of everybody else, which is either to be indifferent or to be part of the problem, is all that's required.
I certainly hope you're right, Benny. I really do, because I'm exhausted. And I'm broke, and this county is successfully keeping my husband from practicing his profession in his business, which we are trying to sell. We are hoping to get this mess somehow cleared up, and we want to leave California and be self-governing, peaceful humans who treat our fellow human beings with respect and do no harm and honor the contracts that we willingly go into with other human beings. And that's it. We've never harmed anyone in our entire lives. There is no living, breathing human who has brought a charge against my husband. This is just a corporation that's trying to make money and justify its existence for being. And I have uncovered through my research dealing with this that our police department, like many police departments across America, are private, corporate, traded on Dun & Bradstreet. They have shareholders to keep happy, but they have also bound themselves into contracts via grants with the federal government, Homeland Security, and the Department of Justice to receive lots of toys for their police department, such as the MRAP tank that our police department has, and who knows what else they've got. And they brag on the Murrieta, California website that we're the second safest city in America per capita. yet we need tanks and we need militarized police. And let me tell you, that grant that they took to take those toys has a contract attached to that grant. And part of that contract states they have to do so many SWAT-style raids per year. They have to make so many kinds of arrests in different categories, or they have to give their toys back. So people who get sucked into this system, I've talked to this other lady here in my city whose son was out doing some target practice with a BB gun. And Riverside County Sheriff picked him up. They wrote their reports and said that this BB gun was a real gun, and they put him in a lineup, and someone picked this kid out as being involved in a murder. This family has been as destroyed as mine. Their son is rotting away in the same detention center my husband is and has been for over a year, and my understanding is he is also on zero bail. The family has been trying to refinance their home to hire a lawyer. This kid has had nothing more than an arraignment, and he's just being held in these private, for-profit, also traded on Dun and Bradstreet prisons and jails. It's despicable. I feel ashamed that I didn't understand more sooner and stand up for others because, you know, in America, the Black and Hispanic communities have been being abused by police brutality for as long as any of us can remember. And now, let me tell you, it's equal opportunity corruption and racketeering going on because they really don't have enough criminals to keep their private prisons and jails full. So they're literally, in my opinion, making up crime.
Well, they
so that they charge people.
I would disagree. I think they actually do have enough criminals to run the private prisons. The difference is the criminals aren't in the prison; they're running it.
Well, I'll give you that. I will give you that.
Oh, damn, but I'm good.
The people that can't leave, they can't get off of shift and leave. 90%+ of those people are nonviolent. They have never harmed another victim. You know, the war on drugs is crazy. I know you know that and have had shows about that. And this is just more of it. And there's no oversight for these people. And they think they're invincible, but they're not. They are hiding behind their corporate charters and color of law. And at the end of the day, these people don't have magic costumes and magic badges. They're humans just like us, and I hope to see some of the main culprits in Riverside County at some point in the very near future held accountable and liable for what has been done to my family and many, many others.
How many people have been murdered by the police in the United States in the, like, what was it, the first 6 months of 2015? It was like 500 people just shot to death.
I don't know the statistics, but it's a lot. And I read an article the other day, and I wish I had the citation for you, talking about this belief that a huge proportion of police officers these days have PTSD. And I know that from other sources that is probably a very likely scenario. A lot of police officers are ex-military, and they've dealt with a lot of very terrible traumas. When your mind and brain and your body has dealt with that kind of trauma over and over and over again, you become a little gun happy and a little, and I'm not trying to be flippant about that. What I'm saying is that your body reacts to the slightest provocation as though your life, very life, were in danger.
It's a limbic system disorder, and that's what controls the reptilian fight or flight response, most ancient part of our brain. So what we found is also when your limbic system is triggered, it reduces your frontal lobe capacity, which is your higher thinking, by up to 85%. So not only are you being reminded by the things that are in front of you, and having a physical response to them, but your ability to comprehend and deal with them simultaneously gets quashed by the fear response.
Exactly. And yes. I was just getting to that because that is something that I have been studying and doing classes on, that fear adrenal stress response. And it's very true. When you are triggered in that fashion, your higher intellectual skills, analytical skills, just go out the window. And it's like you need to defend yourself, like your very life is at stake. And that has its place, but it's now people are being triggered in scenarios where their life is not at stake. And so they're constantly in this perpetual fight or flight mode that they don't get out of.
Well, furthermore, onto that, we've found that the flicker rate on television sets produces this limbic response simultaneously with all the bright colors and the flashings and the shifting of shadow. Your eyes are designed to pick up slight movements of and shades out of the corner of your eye, because if you see sort of like an orange flash out of the corner of your eye and you're in a jungle or something, your brain instantly goes into stress mode because it could have been a tiger and you run. But what's problematic about this is that Americans are now spending between 6 and 8 hours a day watching television, getting a low dose of that limbic response, a constant stress and anxiety culture, perpetrated through the mainstream media to a large degree. I'm not going to disparage any of the other shows that just basically pump out government-regulated propaganda to people. And in fact, I found out yesterday, and this is why I love some of the New Zealand activists that I have on the show, because god damn, they're well-researched. New Zealand's mainstream media has been under what they call Directive D since 9/11/2001. What that means is you can't tell a story or show a TV show unless the government approves of it.
Wow.
And apparently wow. This has been going on in the United States since 9/11 as well. So let's think about this. We're talking about a war on everything that makes humans human, a war on everything that is valuable, a war on civilization itself, by ruthless criminal sociopaths who have no conscience. And the reason why they can get to sleep at night is because they don't have a conscience, you know, head, pillow, it's done, you know. Here's the thing. There's only traumatized people are really going to be able to fight it. And I find that very interesting, is that it's usually those who have been traumatized most by the system who have the compulsion, the I don't have a choice in the matter kind of compulsion to fight against it, isn't it? And what's interesting about that is they're often the most damaged of the bunch, but they're the only people who have actually had that trauma, so they're the only ones who have the motivation until it happens to you. That motivation that I must do this, that compulsion, this I don't have a choice, this must be done, I must stand up, I must do something, I am compelled to do it under moral obligation, that's not there until you really feel it yourself. And that's why I encourage people, when people are talking on this show, telling you about this stuff, try and feel it. Maybe something will trigger. Maybe you will change what you're doing. Maybe you will help humanity in some way rather than just listening to the show. I don't want people to be listening to the show for your entire life. I don't want lifetime listeners. I want people to listen, be inspired, be motivated, stop listening, and go out and start living your life and start bettering humanity.
I really appreciate those comments. I really do, Vinny. My son, who was only 12 when this happened, he was pretty traumatized. They put him in jail for 3 days. I was telling you about this crazy contract that they were making us do, like all of us were basically on home arrest. And we filed some paperwork in June of 2013, saying that all of this was done under duress. No one was paying any attention to any of our complaints that we were sending to all you know, the different city managers, city attorneys, attorney generals, you name it, up the chain. And we filed this thing saying that we were making this contract null and void. Our signature bound us to it, so we were removing our signature. And within 3 days, this county went and rearrested my 12-year-old out of his last day of school, end of year party, handcuffed him and ankle cuffed him, and took this 70-pound kid out of his classroom, like, because his parents quit calling in and telling them we were going to school and back home and we were going to go to the grocery store, that they needed to jail a 12-year-old again, and they held him for another 4 days. They put him in a room that was dirty with blood smeared on the wall in the shape of a cross. They pumped rap music into his room for hours on end. He's a vaccine-injured kid, and they threatened to give him shots while he was there. They basically tortured and abused him for a total of 7 days. And he needed help. He was waking up in the night constantly. He slept on, we had to bring his mattress into our master bedroom and put it at the end of our bed for months on end, because he would wake up terrified that the police were coming back in the house to take him or to take his dad or to take me. He would get up and sleepwalk into the bathroom and lock himself in where the shower was and turn on the water. And we couldn't reason with him through the door because he's in this half sleep, half awake state. So I took him to a therapist. I had been a psychiatric nurse for 20 years and did child psych for years. And I understand that industry very, very well, and it exposed itself to me as I learned more and more about the nature of psychotropic drugs and who is producing them and what kind of testing is actually being done. I worked in some teaching hospitals, so I know. I had it exposed to me, but my son needed help, and I needed to also document the trauma that this county had put us through. But the person that I took him to, the therapist I took him to, ended up turning us into CPS because she claimed I, as his mother, was making delusional statements about the police and law enforcement in Riverside County, as if I was making all of this stuff up that was going on.
Kim? Because each of these individuals that you mention, as they act, as they do something illegal, the first thought that pops into my mind every single time, yep, they're on the take, you know? And
yeah.
I was looking at MK Ultra, the CIA-sanctioned mind control program, which got exposed even though they got rid of much of the documents. This is basically what's happened. It became illegal and a big kind of hot topic to experiment on humans and do mind control, trauma therapy and things of that nature. Basically trauma-based mind control. So what happened was they go, all right, let's take them to black sites and we're going to do some rough experimentation on the general population by putting people who are psych warfare or military intelligence into the general population, and they're going to experiment on people, you know, just in a general kind of way.
All right.
Does it sound like your son's under some kind of trauma-based mind control program?
I don't think they had him long enough to do that.
Like a mini trauma-based mind control program.
I mean, some of the tactics that they used in that so-called juvenile hall jail situation are certainly traumatizing to a 12-year-old who, like I said, had never even been in any kind of trouble at school, had never even been to detention. I mean, this was like a total nightmare come true. And, you know, that's really hard for a child to take. And then once his dad got arrested and was, you know, taken in front of a group of people at computers at the detention center where he's at now, and forced to, you know, and mind you, these accusations had been hanging over my husband's head since April of 2013. They don't arrest him until November of 2013, but they take him into this room with people sitting at computers to quote unquote do a body cavity search. And some big officer is snapping on the blue gloves like he's going to stick his hand up my husband's hind end in front of a room full of administrative type people. This is the kind of tactics that are done.
Dehumanization.
And who knows where else.
Well, it's important in mind control techniques is to break down the psyche of the victim. And people's psyches are built up of a number of things. For example, personal space, having enough sleep, and it just kind of is a downhill slope from there. So if you can take from them any kind of individual sovereignty, like you have to piss when we tell you, you have to shit when we tell you, you are going to have this happen to you, you are going to be stripped and dehumanized, you are going to have the water cannons and all of this stuff, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's a vampirical power sucking technique, I think. It's essentially designed to destroy the individual so that they cannot resist, so that they can be perpetually victimized, or at the best case scenario, maybe they'll be released into the general public and no longer pose a threat because they're so damaged, or better yet, they would commit suicide because they're so damaged and pose no more problem in the future.
Right. Well, it had the opposite effect on our family. From the very beginning, we saw that this was completely morally apprehensible, and we have chosen, at great sacrifice to ourselves, to stand up against this beast. And I feel like if more people had had the courage to do that as the totalitarian bootsteps have been marching to the militarization of our entire planet, we might not be as far along in this martial law setting we seem to find ourselves in as we are. But if we don't stop it right now, if we don't collectively stand up together, if we don't take the risk to do what's morally right and say, regardless if I lose all of my temporal earthly wealth, this is the right thing to do, is to fight back. Yeah. And that's what Dave and I have chosen to do. And one of the reasons we're coming on your show is to see if, you know, people will throw a dollar towards us. If all of your listeners would just give $1 to our Dortch Family Legal Defense Fund on PayPal, which is linked to my husband, david.dortch@gmail.com. We could bring on a lot of reinforcements to help Melody. She's only one gal, and she's got 3 Dortch cases alone on her plate right now. Our civil case and now 2 criminal cases that are complete, bogus, made-up malarkey against my husband. And this is, you know, we're just one average American family who has been attacked by the state, by the government we created. Yet we cannot find any member of this local government or state government yet that has chosen to step in and intervene in this situation.
I would probably say that there's a good reason for that. Either A1, they're on the take, or B, they know what kind of consequences will come upon them if they lend their support to you.
And there are absolutely consequences. And I was going through a timeline today. I'm working on the latest briefing that I'm working on this, the timeline of consequences to the Dortches for speaking out. And that is even talking on talk shows like this. Right after they did, Kim will have to correct me on the timing on some of this, but right after they did one of their first media interviews, the local police department put out a press release defaming Dr. Dortch.
Yep.
And there have been just so many steps of this that every time they speak out about this, they get stepped on in another fashion, in another way. And there's just no end. And so, yes, people need to realize that may not be happening to them right now, but there's no one going to be left to stop them. And I think about what happened in the Holocaust. I recently read a book called Perpetrators, Victims, Bystanders. And it talks about the psychology of different aspects of the German community and how they contributed to allowing the Holocaust to happen. And it is just such a reminder of how everybody plays a role into what happens in their society and their community at large. And you need to stand up for the right thing in your sphere of influence and whatever it is that you are able to do you need to stand up for the right thing, and you need to advocate where you have that ability to do that and help out where you can, because you don't know if you're going to be the next person that is going to be in the forefront of something awful happening to you. And it's frightful to me to see the Dorch family, who's very similar to my family, you know, why them and not me? And I'm going to fight for them because I'm also fighting for me and for those I know and love and for my community and society as a whole, because it shouldn't be this way. It doesn't have to be. And our founding fathers did not design it this way.
Now, that's another interesting point. I was having an argument with somebody on today, and he says, oh, if New Zealand just had the right constitution, none of this would be a problem. And I just thought about that for a second, and I was like, you know, I actually doubt that just writing a good constitution alone will make the billionaire psychopaths that run the country for decades, 100 years or so, just throw their hands up in the air and go, ah, oh, shit, they're fighting us with pieces of paper. Oh, my God. All we've got is nuclear weapons, predator drones, global surveillance, and militarized police. Whatever will we do? You know?
But, you know, there's power in paper. And I'll introduce you to a new term that I learned just recently in doing my research, and that is paper terrorism. Apparently, the powers that be don't like paper and don't like papers being filed that point out discrepancies and problems in the system. There's more power in that.
Which is why they have militarized police to assault the people who have these dangerous pieces of paper.
And the pens.
Exactly. It was like, I saw a great Velociraptor meme, and he goes, if the pen is mightier than the sword, does that mean the keyboard is mightier than the AK-47?
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
Now, I was thinking about what you were saying about doing the right thing, and I came across this realization myself a couple of years back, is that when you're doing the right thing, you only have to do it just because it's the right thing to do. It doesn't actually need any further justification. It's one of the simplest ways you can look at something. Is this the right thing to do? Does this feel Absolutely. Right to me? Boom, that instinct is correct, right? Now, there's consequences for this, of course, by doing the right thing. And my friend Eve Gilbert, she was asked once by one of her readers, why do you do this? Why do you expose the scumbaggery? And aren't you scared? And she goes, yeah, I'm terrified. But I'm even more terrified of what will happen if I don't say anything. Right? And
That describes me perfectly. I am terrified. I'm human. They've locked up my husband on what amounts to a 45-day psych eval that would never fly in a hospital. I mean, like I said, I was a psych nurse. If he were in a facility called a hospital, or, you know, he would have to be seen by a judge within 72 hours. And if he was not a danger to himself, danger to others, or gravely disabled, which means unable to provide food, clothing, and shelter, they would have to let him go. But because it's a court and because it's a jail, they are suspending his criminal case upon doing competency hearings. It's just, it's absurd. Yet, here we are.
And I also wanted, this raises one other interesting point, because we mentioned Nazi Germany, and what was interesting about that is that all the people who helped Hitler rise to power in the initial early days died inextricably just after he was made Chancellor. You know why that is? Because if you've got a whole bunch of criminal scum that helped the chief criminal scumbag get to power, the only people that can bring him down are those who helped get him in there. So now that I know that these authorities and these general people listen to these broadcasts, I want to just send a message to you. Where do you think this is heading? If they can do this to an ordinary person, what do you think they're going to do to you? What do you think the future's going to look like when this is the common standard practice for everybody's lives? Do you think you're going to get rewarded for this? Do you think you're going to enjoy living in a society as bad as that? And what do you think is going to happen once you do get into some kind of position of power, or once an ultimate order does come down? You, the very people who helped institute its inception, will be the first to be culled after it is established. You understand that, don't you? You understand that you, your family, everything you've ever known will be gone. And the only thing that will be left is tyranny, scumbaggery, horror, and terror. You are a part of this. You can stop being a part of it by quitting your job today. Preferably! Because the less people that are part of the problem today, the less the problem will be tomorrow.
Well, and I would argue not even, I mean, it depends on the circumstance, not necessarily quit. There are some that there are that are in positions of authority that have the ability to turn this around. I don't know about Riverside County, because from what I see, it's pretty far gone. But in general, I think there are still plenty of decent law enforcement officers that don't buy into this, and they need to stand up for that and not allow the ones that are trying to take it down in a wrong path take control over it. Because you're absolutely right. If you go along with this, it just gets worse and worse. And if you're part of it, you're done at the end of that transition anyway. So,
and it will be your own employers and your own purpose. What was it? The trouble with loyalty to a cause is that the cause will always betray you.
Yeah.
I do have to say that, you know, there have been some deputies at this jail who have stood up and told my husband that, you know, there are good guys in there and that they know he doesn't belong there and that they have his back. And I, you know, I believe that all things happen for good for those who love their creator and have good intentions for what they want to see this world be. And my husband and I, that pretty much describes us. And truly, there have been some serious miracles that have happened despite how horrible this situation is. And we do feel like, you know, we've sort of been called, that we had willing hearts, that we saw what was wrong and we were willing to stand up. And we're just allowing God to use us and hope that the ultimate, you know, praise and glory comes from our willingness to stand up for what's right and hope that things get better and that our kids, our children's children's children will have a better world to live in than we're living in right now. I mean, that's my goal, is to get these kind of stories out there, like Melody said, for people who are decent humans that are trapped in the different parts of this matrix. Make a difference where you are. Or if you can't, figure out a way to get out and not contribute to it any longer.
And I think part of the reason why these things are very important to get out into the public consciousness is the reason why it actually cracked down on you so hard and destroyed you so massively is because you didn't see it coming, did you? But if somebody if somebody was listening to this broadcast and a cop arrested their son or something of that nature on a similar BS charge, suddenly you're aware. And the information becomes relevant to you, and you can stage around. Because the thing about psychos, I've found, particularly ones who are in positions of power, is they're very predictable. The problem is, you have to be incredibly, assumptively cynical, all right? I'm right 90% of the time about psychos, because I think more cynically, or just as cynically as they do. 90% of the time I'm correct. The 10% of the time that I'm wrong, it's because it's worse than I could ever possibly imagine.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's a horrible world, and I think we all better kind of get into the groove of it, right? And when we have an entire system that is predicated upon scumbaggery protects it, kind of like an immune system. You feel like you've been turned into a virus, and you're just trying to, you know, you're trying to have kids, and you're trying to breed, and eat some cells up, and it's going to be nice. But here come these white blood cell bastards! Holy shoot! They're dangerous! They're killing us! They're eating us! Oh my god! You know, that's what it is. We're like a disease that's being purged from a psychopathic establishment body. You know, that's what I feel like we're being treated as, like a dangerous infection, a poisonous insect, one that needs to be squashed quickly. But you were talking before about the purpose of this and how all these miracles have happened. And it reminds me of what radio show host Jack Blood says. Be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid.
Well, that is an accurate statement. I don't know where the boldness and the courage has come from, but at the end of the day, despite the fact that, you know, they've got my husband locked up and we have, you know, been together for 31 years since we were 17 and 18 years old, we are rare. We're truly one flesh. We are very, very close, intimate family. And walls cannot separate our minds. And it's just amazing how much information the Holy Spirit, whatever people want to call it, has taken to him for me, because I can't physically talk to him. And it's just been reassurance over and over and over again, because he only has 2 visiting hours per week, 1 hour each. And, you know, my children and I look forward to that more than anything else. And it's just ridiculous that this man who has never harmed anyone is one of the most articulate and intelligent, good-hearted, righteous men I know, is locked up by this corrupt county for questioning abuses of law enforcement and officers of the court. It's just incredible to me. But at the end of the day, I feel powerful and peaceful. We each have so much more power than we realize. And I am claiming a peace that passeth understanding for the most part. And I'm human. I've had my moments where I can't quit crying. And I feel like this is never going to end. But all things pass. This too shall pass. And at some point, we're going to be together again, and we're going to be okay, and we're going to go on to do bigger and better things to usher in a better future. That's our goal.
Melody, have you got something to add here?
Yeah, I think there is something to that boldness. And, you know, when I first met Kim and Dave, I just felt compelled that I needed to help them out. I don't consider myself the smartest lawyer in the world, and I'm just a sole practitioner, so I don't have like endless resources of an office, but I had some knowledge and skills and abilities to help out, and feel that I absolutely must do that. And people have come to support me in many different ways. And the Dorch family, or extended family, have been so amazingly supportive, all of us together working on different pieces of the puzzle, trying to make a difference in these cases, and now trying to get Dave out of jail. And you just have to keep going, because giving up just isn't an option. It's just not an option. And so, yeah, it wears us out. It wears us out to frazzle, and I know that, and we all know that, and just sort of rally around each other to keep going. But good will conquer in the end, I am sure. I just hope the end of this process is a lot sooner than later, because Kim and Dave and their family have gone through so much in these past few years that no one should have to go through all of that. No one.
Well, you never know how much pain you can take until you have to take it.
That's true.
It's true.
I think these are the cruxes of the human condition. What happens to us when we're under pressure? What happens to us when it's not like all hope is lost per se, but there's an agenda to extinguish it, to take away that light at the end of the tunnel, to make it a freight train instead of the way out. I always wonder who's going to win, you know? Are the rogue elements of society that are horrific and basically human in appearance only? Who's going to win?
Well, I will tell you this. In the course of time and all the cases that I've pursued, one dynamic I have noticed a lot, and that is when the other side isn't paying much attention to the case and isn't pushing back much, that means you're not really making much progress. And when they start pushing back, when they start being more aggressive and cruel in their actions, it means that you actually are making progress. And I would say since April or May of this year, the reaction back towards the Dortch family and then to me as I came back onto this case has been a much higher, much aggressive, more aggressive, and even sort of self-defensive mode than I have seen at any time prior in the case. And I sense that there's fear on the other side that what has been going on for years, I'm sure, is starting to be exposed. And they're fearful of that. And they don't want that to happen. And so to me, that is a bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, that reminds me of the Lancaster bomber pilot saying during World War II they had to fly from England to Germany to go on bombing missions. And at the time, anti-aircraft weaponry was called flat cannons, and they would fire these shards of metal and stuff and these big black puffs to take the planes out. And the bombers had a saying, if you're copping the flak, it means you're over the target.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. I think she doth protest too much.
Yeah. Well, somehow we have been protected, and David, even though he's incarcerated wrongfully and unlawfully right now, he is physically okay. They have not touched him, and their made-up charges of child endangerment from them setting up a lab in the house that they said was next to the children's room has ended up protecting him in some ways because he's in protected custody in there. He's not in general population. So, like I said, all things end up working together for the good of those who love their creator and who have intentioned in their hearts to make this world a better place. And so that is happening. He is protected, and we will get him out of there. And we just implore your listeners whose hearts may have been touched. You don't have to give much. Just a lot of you give a little, and it will really, really help our cause to get some more help for Melody to do more research and to write the papers and motions and things that need to be done. And pray for us. Pray that our business will sell before it is too, you know, irreparably harmed, because Dave isn't there to take care of his patients who love and adore him. And it's just such a travesty on so many levels, this entire situation. It's just off the hook and ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's as ridiculous as a Cheech and Chong sketch, you know. You go out to the doctor's office. Dave's not here, man.
Yeah. It's pretty much that bad. You got it.
Well, and you know what astounds me? And, you know, every time I've had to go to some sort of jail or correctional facility, it's hard because I see a client who is, you know, incarcerated and things are not good being incarcerated regardless of what the particular circumstances are. But I've got to tell you, every time going in and seeing Dave and seeing that he is maintaining his spirit and his sense of fighting for the right, and that sort of gentle dignity remains and is something that just cannot be killed, regardless of how ridiculous this is or how long he has been sitting there useless behind these walls. And it's just such a tribute to the human spirit to see that, because I don't know that I could do that if I were in jail.
Well, it's a matter of faith. And I found this when I looked at POW numbers in Vietnam, how many died and what were their corresponding religion. They found that the atheists all died. Not one of them survived, basically, being incarcerated for several years in a POW camp, because when they're in that POW camp alone, they're truly alone. They found that the very devout Christians, on the other hand, they were never alone. And a lot of them survived.
That's true.
Yes.
That's true.
My husband is very, very courageous, and he knows who he is. He knows what he's made of, and that is the components of creation itself. And we just have to keep on doing what we're doing, because there is no other moral choice in this. Dave and I were married for 7 years before we had our first child. We had infertility issues because of my poor nutrition at the time. And I've learned a whole lot since then. But these kids that we have, these blessed children that we have, we begged for them. We brought them into this world because we desperately wanted them. And we have done a good job. We're not perfect parents. There is no one on the planet that is. There is no manual that comes with them. But we have been good parents, and we have been attentive parents, and we have worked hard, and we were providing as best as we could. And we were starting to break out of the whole, you know, mainstream in the box thinking and questioning a lot of things. And our kids were doing that along with us. And we're just, you know, we're a formidable force to deal with, because we all feel like we're here during this particular time in history for a reason that we have been called to do. And so, to the best of our ability, we're going to continue to do it. So again, I would just ask your listeners, because I know this is live, so I don't know that, you know, there's like a...
Well, there's archives.
Okay, so in the archives, there may be, you know, you can put up the donation link to PayPal, but for the people listening live, it's the Dortch Family Legal Defense Fund, and it's linked to my husband's David.Dortch, D-O-R-T-C-H, @gmail.com. And any little bit will help, and we appreciate it in advance. Thank you.
And for the Germans, you can donate Deutschmarks.
There you go. We'll take them. Because we are of German lineage, as you can tell by that name.
Oh, God, the jokes just keep getting worse, don't they?
Yeah.
So, the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinnie's jokes. It's supposed to be the other way around, but I think it actually works better this way. All right, we only have a few minutes left in the broadcast. We've had some fun here, haven't we? And we've talked about some very serious issues and very important things. And something feels awakened, something feels unlocked, something feels stronger, more visceral, more visible, as if it's easier to see it for what it is. The situation with the corruption and the scumbaggery. And there is that war of attrition type value. You know, not everybody survives it, but the people who do are those who don't give up, right? Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
The people who are the most successful in life, despite what's been thrown at them, is they always trust themselves, they always believe in themselves, and they're always willing to sacrifice and endure incredible hardship in order to fulfill their vision. There's something inside your head, there's something inside your heart And as a human being, you are also a creator, and you are capable of willing that into the 3D reality. That is the thing that we have that the animals do not, to a large degree, of course. And this is our power. It doesn't matter what the world throws at you. There are things that you can survive that you would never believe that you would live through. There are things that you can accomplish that you would not even think that are possible. And it's the goal of government, to a large degree, in my opinion, to prevent you from realizing you have that kind of power, because it's predicated upon control. Those people who understand their own power, their own infinite reservoir of strength that cannot be destroyed, are impossible to control. There's an old saying, the trouble with free men is that they're impossible to control. You see?
That's true.
All right. Now, anarchy doesn't mean what people think it means. It doesn't mean chaos. It doesn't mean disorder. It just means no rulers, not no rules. There's just nobody who can tell you and force you what to do, right? You've got your own life, and it is yours to do with what you will, so long as you don't destroy or harm anybody else. Nobody should ever be able to tell you what to do in your life, unless they're your parent and you're not 18 years old yet, all right? There's certain forms of justification and authority that actually have real reasons for being there. No, Johnny, you're not supposed to eat that radioactive piece of meat there. No, put the Papa John's pizza down. Look, it's been irradiated. Stop eating it.
So true.
Keep you safe from danger. All right. Well, that sounds very nice. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've enjoyed this broadcast and you want to listen to more, there are umpteen thousands of archives and videos with every single kind of topic you could conceive of at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and at the YouTube channel Mr. News Guerrilla Media. Now, if I haven't interviewed somebody who you think that I should, have you got their email address? Have you got their contact details or something of that nature? Send it this way. But before you do, Google Vinnie Eastwood plus the name of that guest that you think is really awesome, and the chances are actually quite good that I've already interviewed them a number of years ago or something like that, but you weren't listening to the show at the time, so you don't know that. Hence the power of Google. Not only can it surveil everything that we do on behalf of the criminal government, it can also be a wonderful way to access the archives of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, which inform you about the criminal government and Google. I love irony, and perpetual irony is something that I hope to embody later on through life, because I try not to take myself too seriously. You ever notice that? You try not to take yourself too seriously, and you try not to take what people say about you personally. It's very difficult when you've got post-traumatic stress disorder from being betrayed by a criminal government, though, isn't it? Because you get a limbic response that makes you very angry all of a sudden with no fuse. You know, it's not like on the Mission Impossible thing, is it just takes ages and then boom. No. It's just boom straight away. You know, this is the world that we live, and I think if we understand our weaknesses, our strengths, and so on and so forth, and maintain a little bit of faith, a little bit of hope, and a good sense of humor, I think we'll make it through this, everybody. And by the way, today's supposed to be the end of the world, and it hasn't happened. I wonder why. Maybe it's because every single prediction at the end of the world hasn't happened yet. I get really pissed off with people talking about that. I'm totally rambling. I'm totally ranting. And that's why I love listening to myself on this radio show. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, go ahead. Make my news. And go ahead. Make a donation today and support the broadcast. We will see you again sometime, assuredly.